dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and your guide for what we call the battle space of the war for the free world. We have some superb combatants in that battle space with us today. We'll be talking with our friend Jim Hansen, our duty expert who brings with such clarity the boots-on-the-ground perspective to our work here at Secure Freedom Radio. I'll be talking with him about his thoughts on the presidential contenders in their debate last night. I'm going to give you some of my thoughts on the subject momentarily as well, but we'll get the boots-on-the-ground view. He also has some thoughts on what else is happening at the moment in our world, and we'll take stock with Jim about that. Next up, we will be speaking with John Adler. He is the president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. His view on what's likely to happen to our law enforcement community if the funds that are now prospectively to be cut from, among other things, their training budgets take place, and what it will mean for you. We'll get into that in segment three, and in segment four, we'll close up with Andy McCarthy. He'll be reading us in on the latest in the war against the Islamists, and whether we're getting it right or wrong. Get his views on particularly Michael Mukasey's thoughts on the subject, and if you missed our interview with Michael yesterday, I commend it to you. It's available via podcast, and it is terrific, and we'll be getting Andy's take on it as well. So all of that lies ahead, but first I wanted to share with you some of my thoughts as a result of my experience last night at the presidential debates hosted by our friends at the American Enterprise Institute, the Heritage Foundation, and CNN. It was a national security-themed debate for the Republican presidential field. Eight men and women turned up and spent 2 hours visiting with one another and with the audience, both in the room, as I was, and the larger television audience, about their thoughts on some of the most important national security and foreign policy issues of our day. I will give you my short appreciation of what happened. The far and away most impressive performance, the most thoughtful, the most articulate contribution to the debate was made by the questioners from the American Enterprise Institute and Heritage. I think they really helped showcase the array of very important national security challenges hurtling our way, challenges that will, make no mistake about it, make the job of the commander-in-chief in the next presidency difficult, perhaps extraordinarily so, and maybe, depending on how that man or woman handles the portfolio, very dangerous for the rest of us. Besides the questioners, the answers, I have to say, I thought left a lot to be desired. The worst of the group, from, again, my perspective, a peace through strength perspective, of course, were Ron Paul and John Houseman. Congressman Paul and, to a slightly lesser degree, but pretty much the same, John Houseman were taking the position that basically the only thing we really need to care about are our domestic affairs, our economy. If we stop fooling around with the rest of the world, it would leave us alone. We could come home, America, build our nation, and otherwise, be left to our own devices and it would all come out swimmingly. All I can say is, what are they doing on that stage? It would seem to me that there has to be, at the minimum, an historical and competency test that should be applied for people who are seeking, or at least treated as serious contenders for, the office of President of the United States. And I must say, I simply don't see how anybody can argue on the basis of the kind of hard experience we've had as a nation, as a people, as a civilization, over quite some time now, most especially the last century, that this kind of policy approach, isolationism, if you will, a strategy of, maybe appeasement, or at the very least, hoping for peace, despite American weakness, can lead to anything other than disaster. It certainly is unclear to me how you contrast yourself as a party, with the Obama administration, which seems to be pretty much practicing this kind of approach, perhaps with some additional and ugly aspects to it, like allowing our sovereignty be compromised through the UN and other multilateral organizations, and emboldening our enemies in other ways, undermining our allies. But it's basically of a piece, I think, this sort of libertarian isolationist thinking. I believe that the others, with one or two exceptions, either came across as people who hadn't given a whole lot of thought to these issues, had little to say about them other than, you know, the sorts of sound bites that would fill a 30-second appearance, or maybe, if they were lucky, a 60-second appearance. I'd say that Senator Santorum, Congresswoman Bachman, were more impressive in terms of their mastery of some of the important issues involved in national security these days, what we need to do to try to safeguard our homeland, including what I think of as triage, other called profiling, recognizing the peril that Iran represents, and being clear that Islamism, this program brought to us not just by the Iranians of the Shiite strain, but also by the Muslim Brotherhood, is a mortal peril to us elsewhere and here in the United States. Then there was Newt Gingrich, who said several things that I thought were commendable, but several that were profoundly troubling. He was quite robust on the Patriot Act. He made the point, at least in passing, that an electromagnetic pulse attack is something we're not thinking about and should be worried about. It could have catastrophic effects on this country. And then he said some things about amnesty for long-time residents who had come to this country illegally that was very troubling. And his immediate response to cutting the defense budget, while acknowledging that there may be better ways to do defense acquisition, still comes across as lending his prestige and encouragement to those who would further savage the defense capabilities of this country by afflicting us with perhaps another $600 billion in budget cuts under this so-called sequestration process. Of the bunch, it seemed to me, Mitt Romney came across as the best prepared, the most articulate, the most robust. And I say that as someone who has not always thought that he was the best candidate. But in this instance, I think he set the standard against which the others were judged. And my point is really this, folks. Whether he ultimately emerges as the Republican's candidate or someone else does, this particular portfolio is of vital importance. We are ultimately hiring, first and foremost, a commander-in-chief. They must have a grasp of what we are confronting at this moment and what we may well confront in the future from China, from Venezuela, from North Korea, from Russia, from the Islamists, from Iran, and elsewhere. We have to hold them to account. I hope there will be more debates. I hope there will be more focused discussion of this. I hope there will be more thoughtful questions of the kinds our friends at Herigen and AEI came up with, and from the American people as well. Questions that will be well answered for the challenging times that lie ahead. Next up, we'll be talking with Jim Hansen. Get his take on all of this and more straight ahead.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
We could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined, as we have the privilege of being each week, by Jim Hansen, our boots on the ground man, a former special operator who brings us a very important perspective on our conversations about the threats the free world is facing. Jim, welcome back. It's always good to have you. I know you were watching, as was I last night, the national security-themed debate of the Republican presidential candidates. I've shared with our audience some of my thoughts. Give us yours.
Gosh, they'd be an improvement over Obama, but how big a one? You know, I mean, I didn't hear a whole lot of stuff I really enjoyed. There was some good moments. I really like Michelle Bachmann, you know, ponying up a little knowledge. It's nice to see that she spent her time on the Intelligence Committee actually absorbing a little bit about our national security. She seemed to be one of the few with any kind of a solid grasp on what's going on. I don't know.
Specifically,
Frank,
what are you thinking of, Jim? Was it the talk about Pakistan and the importance of maintaining our intelligence ties with them?
Both. You know, I mean, that is obviously, there's no good answer there, but at least she's paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I worry. I don't know. Newt Gingrich is an awful smart guy. I'm not sure I am comfortable with his approach. Ron Paul scares the crap out of me on a good day. Yeah. I mean, I read some things today. People were taking him seriously, saying it's time for Ron Paul to rise to the top. after this debate? I let's hope not. Somebody, Jim Robbins at National Review, was live tweeting the debate, and he said that Ron Paul has all the best ideas we needed for 19th century America.
Yeah.
Well, and that was pretty good.
As I said in the monologue a short while ago, Jim, you know, the trouble is, since the 19th century, we've had a lot of hard experience with trying to apply that kind of practice or policy, and it hasn't worked out very well. In fact, worked out pretty damn badly.
Every time we hide, somebody raises up, does something bad, and then we try to play catch-up. So, I mean, we're the world's policemen. You know, I've said it before, when the world dials 911, the phone rings at the Pentagon. We can pretend it's not so, we can wish it wasn't so, but it's so.
Well, Jim, I don't know that it absolutely, positively always will be so. The question is, if it's not us, who is it? And if it's somebody like, oh, I don't know, communist China, will the kind of response that they provide be consistent with American interests and well, for that matter, freedom more generally?
I'll go with no on that one. I think the nice thing about them is, you know, it would be like outsourcing it, you know, to a New Jersey solid waste company. You know, yeah, they might come and haul away your garbage, but they're going to take all of your possessions at the same time.
Right.
You know, I mean, the Chinese are scarfing up natural resources all over the globe. Do we really want them in charge of responding to dangerous people when they're one of them?
Yeah.
Then what are they going to do about the Russians? No. I mean, it's a bad idea. It is us. And if we abdicate that responsibility, then the world becomes a much more dangerous place for everybody.
Yeah. This is a theme, Jim Henson, as I'm sure you know, that Mark Stein addresses at length in his new book, After America, Get Ready for Armageddon. He says, you know, the United States more or less seamlessly took over from Great Britain as the last, you know, world superpower, and the world hardly noticed. It was still in good hands. It was run by a pretty benign, if not very, you know, positive superpower indeed. Not so if we abdicate and it turns out that the Chinese fill the vacuum or perhaps somebody else. And I guess, Jim, I had much the same response to you as you did to Ron Paul and, for that matter, John Huntsman, who seemed to echo some of these same themes. Jim, let me turn to an example of a problem that is likely to afflict the next president that is playing out in real time. I mean, it's going to afflict this president for the remainder of his time in office. May it be short, namely Egypt, a nation that he has helped in no small measure propel into its present chaos. What's going on the ground in Egypt at the moment, Jim Henson, and where do you think this goes next?
You know, Frank, I'm gonna abdicate responsibility for knowing what the hell is coming next. What's going on is chaos. I mean, the military is in charge. Okay, now we would probably be okay with that because, to some extent, there are at least secular influences in the military. You know, they're not blatant Islamists. There are Islamists in the military, but they're not, you know, overall as bad as some of the other folks who could be in charge. Who are all those people in the square? Oh, yeah, you tell me they're the classic youths. You know, the youths are rioting. Okay, that means nothing. And where that's going to go and what the military is going to do and how that transition is going to go, I think that falls under the unintended consequences piece of the wonderful Arab Spring, you know, which obviously now is going to get some snow and turn into Arab winter.
Yeah.
I don't see anything good coming out of it.
It sure sounds like it's the Muslim Brotherhood, you know, not only precipitating the present mayhem, but likely to benefit most from it. And that ain't good, as you know, Jim Henson. Which brings us to Hezbollah, not a Muslim Brotherhood operation, but an affiliated Sharia adherent operation, I guess you'd call it, in now running the country of Lebanon, a proxy for Iran, its foreign legion. Jim, they seemingly have rolled up a spy ring that the United States had in Lebanon. What's the latest on that as you understand it?
You know, can you call a group that meets at Pizza Hut a spy ring, Frank?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, is that fair? You know, that's an insult to all the folks who ran quality spy operations during the Cold War and before, when we actually took that seriously. I have tremendous reservations about our ability to conduct human intelligence, and this is just another nail in the coffin. You know, I mean, there are good people risking their lives right now spying on our enemies, but there are too few of them, there are too few competent people running it, and we put far too little emphasis on it as a way to prevent wars and to actually know what's going on. You know, we seem to think that we can have these technological marvels and electronic intelligence going to tell us what's going on. Well, no. Unless you backstop that with quality human intelligence from spies, dirty people or good people dealing with dirty people, you don't know what's going on. And this is just a prime example of how poor a job we do at it.
Yeah. Jim Henson is our guest. He is, of course, the mill blogger par excellence at black5.net. He also contributes to bigpeace.com, my personal favorite in the blogosphere. We also see his handiwork at the Warriors Legacy Foundation, a terrific charity that is helping tend to our wounded warriors. And, of course, we are pleased to have him with us each week. And, Jim, you've spent time as a special operator in dangerous places dealing with pretty ugly people. You know a lot, I imagine, about how hard it is to do that well and safely, to the extent that we have discovered, to our deep regret, I imagine, that having ripped up by the roots once or twice, the sort of human intelligence component of our national security establishment, where do you think we are? I mean, is it amateur hour in not just Lebanon but elsewhere? And if we don't, in fact, as you suggested a moment ago, have people able to penetrate very operationally secure, or at least efforts are being seriously made to be operationally secure on the part of these Al-Qaeda operations, these cells, Hezbollah and the like, what are the likelihoods of success if we can't break through?
Slim to none, and Slim just left. I mean, that's the problem. I mean, I wish there was an easy answer. Maybe we can make a pitch that it saves money. You know, we have to, maybe we won't have to roll tanks. Maybe we won't have fighter wars if we at least spend some money spying on our enemies and finding out what's going on and preempting some of this. I mean, ideally, Frank, nobody wants to fight a war, specifically and especially all our friends in the military. They are the ones who least want to actually fight. You do that by knowing what your enemies are doing before they do it and preempting it. We can't do that because we don't have the guts since the Carter administration, you know, when they disemboweled our ability to conduct human intelligence, and we've yet to reconstitute it. If we want to spend money effectively, spend it spying, find out what the bad guys are doing, and take them out covertly. I mean, I'm all for that. We can, you know, we won't have public celebrations. Obama can't do a victory dance and spike the football, but at least we'll have made the world a safer place. And I think that's money well spent anytime.
Jim Henson, we have to leave it at that. Thank you so much for your insights and for your service, past, present, and future. We look forward to talking with you again next week. Next up, John Adler joins us from the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association with his take on how we're doing and whether we're making the job of those who must defend us infinitely more difficult. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Following is an important message from President Clinton and President Bush.
In January, Haiti experienced an environmental catastrophe and human tragedy of epic proportion.
But thanks in part to the generous spirit of the American people, the country of Haiti has survived. But now the people need to thrive. President Clinton and I have seen firsthand the power of your contributions at work.
The Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund is on the ground, funding programs that create jobs, teach skills, and assist local businesses.
Our fund is dedicated to supporting initiatives that encourage local entrepreneurs and help build an inclusive economy that lifts up everyone.
Help us continue this work so the people of Haiti have an opportunity to prosper.
Thank you.
To donate, go to ClintonBushHaitiFund.org or text QUAKE to 20222 to give $10. Message and data rates may apply. Brought to you by the Clinton Bush Haiti Fund and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Effney.
Welcome back. We are joined by John Adler, president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, a man who has devoted his professional life to law enforcement. Back in 1991, it began, and he served, among other things, as a federal criminal investigator since 1994. We wanted to bring John on to talk about a couple of different things. It's been a while since we visited, John. Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Frank. It's great to be on with you.
Thanks for the service that you personally are doing and of all of the folks that you represent at the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. I want to talk with you about something I know is top of mind for you and your members, namely the kinds of cuts that are now in the offing for the training of your law enforcement personnel. Give us a sense of how serious a problem this is and what you think it might portend.
Well, it's almost akin to giving us a flat tire or a series of flat tires and then telling us to race up a hill.
Chase the bad guys, specifically.
Yes, exactly. It's sort of, you know, put us in a potato sack and say, now go fetch the bad guy. It's very debilitating for us. My concern is, you know, I understand the complexities that the super committee faced, that Congress faces. I don't like it. I don't like their performance, but I understand the global perspective of what they're trying to accomplish. And my concern is that they, the super committee, and numerous members of Congress are losing sight on the significance of sustaining funding for both federal law enforcement and active military. And, you know, and that's expressed in, and Mike Fitzpatrick has a bill out, the SHIELD Act, which tries to emphasize the absolute essential nature of continued funding. Now, what happens, Frank, is when you put a federal law enforcement on the bench, if you will, if you subject them to a furlough, if you take them out of the fight, you weaken our homeland defenses. And my concern is that while the budget debate continues in terms of how to make the necessary cuts to fix the deficit, which does need to get fixed, the federal law enforcement component has become an anonymous feather on a duck in a shrinking barrel. And unfortunately, there are just numerous lines of sight placed on us, and all we're asking is, let us do our job. Let us go out there and keep America safe. But unfortunately, if they cut funding, they're going to cut us. We're going to lose the number of personnel we have. We're going to lose equipment. We're going to lose training. More of us are going to get killed, but we won't complain about that because we understand the risks. My bigger concern is just not having enough bodies to keep Americans, our institutions, and our homeland safe.
Yeah. Just to stay with this one more moment, John Adler, the significance of training, I suspect those in the private sector know that, you know, when budgets get tight, one of the things you stop doing is the stuff you'd like to do, but it's sort of nice to have, but you try to protect your personnel, you know, your force structure, if you will, and your equipment for them and so on by cutting training. To what extent does that translate in your experience, John, to a real degradation of proficiency and the skill sets that, in particular, in the kind of complex environment many of your law enforcement officers operate in, can be not only, you know, contrary to the mission that we ask them to perform, but perhaps to their survival?
Well, I mean, that's a great question, Frank, and you phrased it very well. You know, there's a saying, you fight like you train. And it's not as though, you know, you learn how to ride a bicycle, you get on once, and the muscle memory's there for your life. It's more akin to probably a professional fighter who has to train for each fight. The difference is they fight maybe twice a year. We're fighting every day, if you will, in terms of trying to carry out our mission. Training is not something that you simply do once in the academy. You kick them out of the academy and say, okay, go have at it. Training is essential, as you said, you know, within your question, to maintain the proficiency levels. And those skills, it could be in a variety of areas. It's even just something that gets overlooked as updating just legal procedure. Certain changes in the law, we need to stay current in terms of what's current by way of any Supreme Court decision, any policy change. This is entirely relevant for us, not to mention, obviously, all the tactical training that's critical for us, keeping up to speed with the new weaponry, not just our own, but recognizing what the bad guys carry, keeping up with cyber crimes, computer training, you know, a variety of interview and interrogation techniques, report writing, even something as simple as that, things that come up in court to strengthen our ability to build good cases.
Right. I imagine in part, John Adler, this is a matter as well of knowing how to handle yourself and the people that you may be apprehending or otherwise dealing with so you don't lose cases in court when you could successfully prosecute them if you handle them in accordance with the kind of information you've just described.
Correct. I mean, so it's really a combination of officer safety and legal procedure, if you will, in terms of strengthening our ability to investigate criminals and capture them. And it's a little disconcerting, Frank, to see how much money we've been spending on foreign components overseas for their training purposes, whether it's the Iraqi police and the Mexico police or the Afghani police or even Palestine. And we spend billions of dollars there, yet unfortunately, the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, you know, is something where you walk on base and you say hello and the only response you may get is your echo. And there's something inherently wrong when we spend our money first overseas versus training our own, because the most imminent threats are here, not abroad.
Right. And there are always questions as to how effective that other training is overseas as well. John Adler,
correct.
Let me ask you this. Again, our guest is the president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. One of the issues that has troubled me in this training space is the guidelines that the Department of Homeland Security has recently promulgated, which effectively require those who use federal funds for training of the kind you're talking about in the area they call, that's of course a euphemism, countering violent extremism, that those training programs, training personnel, training materials have to be vetted by and at least implicitly approved by leaders of the communities affected. Which, in other words, again, euphemistically means Muslim leaders, almost all of whom, based on the kind of experience we've seen, particularly under this administration, translate into organizations associated, in fact, even shown to be in court, associated with the Muslim Brotherhood. What, as a law enforcement professional, does it say to you that we might put ourselves in a position where the very people that we are working against here in the United States, or should be, are in fact now the arbiters of what we can train our personnel to know and say and do?
You know, Frank, it makes me think right away. Prior to going out and executing a series of arrest warrants and search warrants, we formulate an operational plan. This sounds to me something similar to, if I'm going to form an operational plan and brief my team, I then have to go to the bad guy, the target, or the subject, share my operational plan with them, get their approval before I execute. That makes absolutely no sense. Every law enforcement component, and I think what we're talking about here is federal dollars going to state and local law enforcement components for training, every one of these departments has in-house counsel, and they are more than capable of reviewing whatever programs their particular departments are going to run and how they're going to use the money. It is entirely unnecessary, it's counterintuitive, and it's risky to go out and consult with any organization, any outside group. If the money is funded for law enforcement should be trusted on how they use the money, how they apply it. Everyone has a variety of training they have to go through every year, whether it's cultural diversity, it's ethics training, it's EEO training. We all go through it. We all respect it. There is absolutely no reason at all to consult with any outside group, whether it's an ethnic-based group, a business group. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I couldn't agree
every
more.
Department,
yeah, especially, yeah. John, since it really sounds, at least from what the guidelines of the Department of Homeland Security are suggesting, is not just consulting with them. It's having to obtain their approval, which makes it even crazier. John, very quickly, and we've only got a minute left, your perspective on the Occupy Wall Street and other cities and campuses movement, what does it mean for civil society and the sorts of folks that you represent who are obliged to help protect it?
You know, it's interesting, Frank, if you watch what's happening, the sort of underlying message that this group or these groups are trying to get out there seems to get lost, and now it's sort of elevating to a law enforcement versus protest, a conflict, which is a shame. Now, when you look at any one of these groups, you're going to have a couple of people there who are well-intended and may have something to say, whether you agree with them or not. And then you have that other group, the criminal element, that are nothing more than opportunists who are looking to exploit any sort of rally or protest to just vent their anger and their criminal behavior. And it's very difficult and challenging for law enforcement because everybody has a video camera, everybody's taping. And it reminds me of hockey when, you know, you go to a hockey game and you see one of the guys used to call him a goon. And the goon would take a cheap shot at one of the players, and when a player retaliates, the ref catches the player retaliating. And what we see a lot of is the taunting of the law enforcement officers, and when they respond, out come the video cameras. And it's a very frustrating situation.
I can only imagine. John Adler, we have to let you go. Thank you so much for what you are doing. God bless you, sir.
Thanks,
keep up
Frank.
The great work. Next up, Andy McCarthy on some of the stealth jihad as we have been hearing about it and as we are only now discovering what's afoot. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medications, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call. And I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened. Period.
That is the role of the text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show. Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff, like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined by the inimitable Andy McCarthy. I had the privilege of being with Andy at the David Horowitz Freedom Center's Restoration Weekend last weekend, and was in the company of giants, including our guest. Andy is, of course, a regular here at Secure Freedom Radio. I'm very pleased to say, a former federal prosecutor, the author of Willful Blindness and the Grand Jihad, and of innumerable and incalculably important essays which appear at National Review online and in other outlets. Andy, one of the things that I know you have been impressed by, as have I, are the resonances of some of the work that that I think you have been particularly instrumental in illuminating, namely the very, very powerful speeches that the former Attorney General of the United States, Michael Mukasey, has been making, most recently at the Federalist Society, before that at the Manhattan Institute. Give us your thoughts as to both the content of what General Mukasey is saying and the significance of a person of his stature making these very important points.
Well, Frank, let me just begin by saying it was a great pleasure to see you and spend some time together over the weekend. I thought it was a really important exercise. With respect to Judge Mukasey, and he'll always be Judge Mukasey to me. He was the presiding judge in the Blind Shake case that I prosecuted. I think the importance of him lending his powerful mind and his eloquence to this cause is precisely that he's such an independent thinker and such a deep thinker, so that he's one of these guys who cares deeply about the country and our national security, And when he sees something that he thinks is obviously a challenge to it, he feels not only the need to speak out on it, but to speak out on it in a way that he singularly can. And my best memory of those years that we spent together almost now 2 decades ago trying the blind shake case was the fact that no matter how politically incorrect was the script from which the government was reading, whether it was down in Washington at Main Justice in the White House or even on the courthouse steps, within the four corners of the trial, there was no political correctness at all. It was probably the only place in the world at that time, or certainly in America at that time, where you really got an unvarnished view of the wages of Islamist ideology and what causes terrorist attacks and what actually fuels the ideology that causes terrorist attacks. I've said about every bad thing you can say about using our courts to confront what's really a national security problem. But I think one good thing you can say about it is that when you put 12 people in a jury box, particularly in New York, but I think almost anywhere in America you could say this, and you ask them to convict people of serious things, they want to know exactly what happened, and they want to know why it happened. Otherwise, they won't convict them. So you really do get a clear view of probably a clearer view of this ideology than you would get anywhere else. And because of the way Judge Mukasey presided over the case, I think it was completely done without political correctness, and it was done really with a microscope on the challenge to America.
Yeah. You know, as you were saying all that, Andy, and I certainly agree with it. I've not had the intimate, you know, connection to the judge that you have had, but certainly watching him from afar and getting to know him a little bit since he left office as the Attorney General, it reminds me of kind of that old credo of Superman: truth, justice, in the American way. And it's heartening to know that that applied big time in his court, and I think it certainly is the approach that he's bringing to his public educational efforts now, with the authority of as you say, a very distinguished career and an incredible mind brought to bear as well.
Frank, I'd say that truth, justice, and the American way are a damn sight better than see no evil, hear no evil, and speak no evil, which I think is the
Holder Justice Department at the moment, yeah. For sure. Andy, quickly, on a point that that the judge brought up in our conversation yesterday here at Secure Freedom Radio, and again, we're speaking with our friend and colleague Andy McCarthy, who prosecuted the blind sheik and his co-conspirators before Judge Mukasey, was his comment about the training of our law enforcement and military and intelligence personnel pursuant to a new directive from not the Justice Department, but the Homeland Security Department. And you, I think, have expressed some concerns about this as well, as did John Adler, our guest in the segment preceding yours, from the Law Enforcement Officers Association. Give us a sense of what, from your perspective as a law enforcement professional also, it means that we might have the Muslim Brotherhood in the decision-making loop when it comes to who trains and with what materials and to what end.
Really, Frank, it's not much different than it would have been if we said, if we had, say, brought the conciliaries of the five New York-based organized crime families into the Justice Department in the 1980s and consulted with them on how we ought to enforce the racketeering laws.
Right. Or I think the KGB during the Cold War on how we should fight the Soviets.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good analogy too. When I said the conciliaries, I said that pointedly, because the idea is that these guys are kind of masquerading themselves as non-forcible, non-violent actors, and under the crazy government approach to terrorism these days and to Islamist ideology in general, basically, if you're not, even if you want to supplant the American Constitution with Sharia law, but you're not blowing up a bridge this instant to make that happen, you're deemed to be a moderate. So, you know, you're taking the people who are ostensibly nonviolent, but who are on, in every other way, on all four corners, on the same page as everybody else, from bin Laden to Saeed Qutb on the ideology. You're basically bringing the enemy in and having him put scales over our eyes.
It constitutes another form of willful blindness, or as you just said, Andy McCarthy, see no evil and hear no evil and speak certainly no evil, or not understand the evil, more to the point, that is amongst us. Andy, quickly, two other subjects I'd like to just get your thoughts on. One is, what's going on with the Muslim Brotherhood at the moment in Egypt? And secondly, this character by the name of Duck Duck in Iraq, what his prospects might be.
Well, on Egypt, Frank, I think what's going on is the same thing that went on earlier in the first stages of the uprising. As you and I have discussed before, you know, to the extent that people were depending or are depending on the Egyptian military to be the thing that holds the Islamists in check in Egypt, I think that's a very bad bet for the reasons we've discussed before. The Egyptian military really is an amalgam of Egyptian society, which is heavily Islamist. So I don't think that that will go well. What we now see is the Brotherhood rising up against the military again, because it has the sense that the military is going to try to block the Islamists from what they see as their due, which is rising to power in Egypt. On Duck Duck, you know, that's a very bad situation. We have basically an administration that won't use Gitmo, which it has kept open, to take in new enemy combatant detainees. And if you don't have a place to hold them, you have to release them. And, you know, I've been very critical in the past of Senator Lindsey Graham on a number of things, but I think he's been heroic on this issue, along with you know, a handful of other people in the Congress, taking the point that if we turn this guy back over to the Iraqis, he will simply be released, and he's a terrorist operative who will go back to the business of killing Americans, which is the business that he's been about all along. So we have to come to grips with the fact that we have to have a way to detain enemy combatants in wartime who, if they are released, will go back to killing Americans, but who cannot be brought to our country for civilian trials.
Sounds like a perfect description of Guantanamo Bay, Andy McCarthy, and I completely agree with you. That's where this guy ought to be. Andy, we'll be following that story and many others with you closely in the week ahead. Thank you very much for being with us. As always, keep up the great work at National Review Online and here at Secure Freedom Radio. We look forward to visiting with you as well tomorrow. Same time, same station. We'll have a special Thanksgiving version of Secure Freedom Radio with Baroness Carolyn Cox, a woman I am especially thankful for. Find out more tomorrow. Talk to you then. And happy Thanksgiving in the meantime.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.